TRE Talk Radio Europe.
The Daily.
It is Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain, and I'm delighted now heading over stateside to speak to Christian Stultz. Have I said your name right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Most people mess it up, so you got it.
Is it Stultz Presley?
Yes.
Okay, because on the book, on one of the things, it just says Christian Stultz, and then it says Presley in another area, so I'm just checking. No relation.
Well, I'm just trying to keep it interesting, you know, just keep it interesting for you.
I know you get this all the time, but any relation to the king?
You know what? Unfortunately, no. I kind of wish we were, but no, we get that all the time.
I bet you do. That's great. Well, talking about music here, and we're looking at talk about Rodgers and Hammerstein, you can talk about Irving Berlin, and we're talking in particular about Dorothy Fields here. Now, I've got to admit, I love my music, but I knew the name, but I didn't know much more. And then I looked at the songs, and I know the songs, of course. Everybody knows
right.
the song. But was she kind of a victim of her time in the respect that she didn't get the recognition, maybe not from them, her peers, but from the wider public?
Yeah, that's very possible that she was just a woman working at a time when a lot of women weren't working in the field that she was working. Another idea for why her name isn't known like a Rodgers and Hammerstein or an Irving Berlin or a Cole Porter is because she worked with 18 different composers. So her career spanned from the late 1920s until her death in 1974. And throughout that span of time, it wasn't just Fields and McHugh or Fields and Kern. She worked with 18 different people. So she was a real, real, real busy lady.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't easy to pigeonhole her like it was Rodgers and Hammerstein or Rodgers and Hart before that, or Cole Porter, who wrote his own music and lyrics, or Irving Berlin, who did the same.
But she was certainly recognized by her peers on the same. They kind of saw her as an equal, did they not?
Absolutely. In fact, they were very collegial. She and Richard Rodgers actually dated as teenagers, if you can believe that. So they had a long history together. They did amateur shows in New York City as teenagers and in their early 20s. Dorothy's brother Herbert wrote librettos for those early Rodgers and Hart shows. So she definitely had a wonderful relationship with all of those folks that she worked with. And they loved her as every bit their equal.
I'm talking about pioneering and trailblazing for women, I suppose, but it's still not so heard of today, even so much, is it? So it's like for that time, it was quite revolutionary.
Right. You're absolutely right. It's kind of astounding. In fact, in the book, I did a lot of research, not just to look at the life of Dorothy Fields, but to see, well, have things really changed now? And it's kind of astounding how they have not to look at people who are writing for Broadway now. And there are certainly women who are trying to get there and want to be there and have their voices heard. But for whatever reason, it is still a largely male universe on Broadway and in the theater world. Again, not to say that there aren't incredible women writing and trying to break through that glass ceiling, but for whatever reason, it's been incredibly difficult. If you look, Dorothy was the first woman to win an Oscar for a song. So she won an Oscar in 1936 for The Way You Look Tonight. If you look at women who wrote songs for films and were given the Academy Award for it between 1936, when Dorothy won it for The Way You Look Tonight, and the modern era, there's only been like 15 other women who have done it in that massive span of time since. So for whatever reason, women are just not having their voices heard in the same way that men are.
And yet the theatre world, you think, is quite progressive in many ways, you know, especially for whatever sexuality you are, whatever lifestyle you have, they seem to be quite accepting and open and the creative kind of world generally. But I'm thinking, you know, who's the female Andrew Lloyd Webber? I think of some great singer-songwriters like Carol King maybe over the years, but there's not many more, like you say.
Right. It's really astounding. And there are women doing absolutely incredible work. And Dorothy would be the first to say, I absolutely do think more women should have their voices heard on Broadway and on stages across the world. But for whatever reason, it's been a tough nut to crack, a tough ceiling to break through.
And songwriting in particular, I mean, the songs are just awesome, aren't they? I mean, I'll mention my favorite, I think, is I'm in the Mood for Love. And I'm hoping that's one of hers now when I said that.
It is one of hers. You got it.
But a lot of the songs we all know, like The Way You Look Tonight, of course, Frank Sinatra famously recorded that as well. She really did arrive, didn't she? She landed it. And what was she like as a person?
Well, Dorothy was, you know, as you write a biography about a person, I've spent the past 17 years studying her.
You must feel like you really know her.
Yeah, I mean, that's like almost half of my life. I wrote my master's thesis about her, my doctoral dissertation about her, and then I wrote a book about her. So, and unfortunately, she died 3 years before I was born, so I didn't get to know her. But I do have a real strong sense of who she was just based on what people have said about her.
Yeah.
And she was a friend to all. All of those with whom she worked would consider her a dear friend. There are many anecdotes that I share in the book about how she was so helpful to cast members of the shows that she was in, but also to charity. She was incredibly charitable. She worked particularly for, she was Jewish herself, so she worked particularly for Jewish charities in New York City, in and around New York City. So she was very charitable, always dressed to the nines, very stylish, very concerned with her appearance and her weight, wanted to stay fit and trim. Very athletic, but also incredibly disciplined when it came to her work. She worked every day, and she would start first thing in the morning, get going, and write, she said, until her wastebasket was full of lyrics that were probably no good and would never be used, but nonetheless, she was working every day. At the same time, she was an incredible wife and mother. She didn't have children until later in life. She was 36 years old when her son was born, and then she had another child, a daughter, 4 years after that. But we see her work slow down as she begins to tend more to them. But then it picks back up. So she really was one who was able to have it all. We're talking 1940, she had a child, and she was making $1 million a year, or the modern equivalent of $1 million a year, as a woman in 1940, which is astounding.
Absolutely.
That she was able to do that. She really was one who seemed, by all external appearances, again, I didn't know her personally, though I wish I did, but she seemed to have it all.
What was her personality like? Was she easy to get on with?
She certainly seems to be, based on what everybody said. Like I said, everyone would say she was a friend to all. She was very quick-witted. Her father had been a vaudevillian, so she grew up listening to him and his partner, Joe Weber, his vaudeville partner, spar in the house with their little verbal acrobatics. So she was very quick-witted. It's not surprising that she ended up as a wordsmith professionally, working as a songwriter. But she was very quick-witted. Everybody loved her, very thoughtful. Always looking for ways that she could use what she had been given to help others. In fact, there's a great story. She owned a home in Brewster, New York, so outside of New York City. And when a fire broke out at the house one night, and when the fire broke out, it was contained, so it wasn't catastrophic. But nonetheless, she and her sister and brother, who were all in the home, made breakfast for the firemen. So she was definitely one who was, you know, in spite of her fame, in spite of her success, she was not one to say, you know what, that's beneath me. You deal with those people. No, she was right there in the thick of it. And the people, speaking specifically of Brewster, where she had a second home, loved her. She hosted garden club events there. Again, lots of charitable functions that she took her success and put it to good use for others.
What would you say was her thing that she did, and actually that was maybe her in her prime, or the thing that she would look back on, the song maybe, or the writing that she enjoyed the most? Do we know that, the answer to that?
We do. Her favorite song that she wrote was The Way You Look Tonight.
I'm going to look it up while you're talking.
Go for it. That was her very favorite song. She wrote that with Jerome Kern, who was the dean of American popular song. And she was, you know, this young kid, compared to Jerome Kern, and was paired with Kern by the studios. And theirs ended up, movie studios, that is. Yeah. And theirs ended up being an incredible partnership, and one that she absolutely cherished. But that was her favorite song that she ever wrote. She was most at home. What she loved, in terms of professionally speaking, she loved writing stories for musicals. So even more than the lyrics, which was probably what she's better known for, she loved the storytelling side of theater. So when she got to tell stories in shows like Annie Get Your Gun, which was her idea and for which she wrote the libretto, that was the prime for her. She loved that.
Having like Frank Sinatra sing your song as well, it must be quite good as well.
Absolutely. That's a great endorsement, is it not?
Absolutely. Did she live a rock and roll kind of celebrity lifestyle, or was she more homely and, you know?
No, she was not at all a rock and roll celebrity kind of lifestyle. Well, let me take that back. There was a time when a lot of songwriters, after the stock market crashed and New York theater kind of went belly up, and yet we've got California, we got Hollywood just beginning to sizzle. A lot of those New York songwriters went to California, and they lived a pretty rollicking lifestyle out there. And she enjoyed that, but she also was ready to get back to brass tacks and settle down and have her family. And when she did that, it was all about home for her.
Not many people cross over theater and songwriting for mainstream. You know, like, obviously, The Way You Look Tonight became a mainstream hit for Sinatra and others like Tony Bennett and others that have sung it. Not many do cross over like that. And I find it fascinating that it's so pioneering to be in those two worlds, really.
Well, and I'll tell you this, not only did she cross over between theater and the pop world, a lot of which intersected in those days, but also her style, she was able to bend and flex as need be as musical styles change. So think about it. In 1928, she writes, "I Can't the Baby," which was a huge hit. But then in 1966, she writes "Hey Big Spender" from Sweet Charity. So, which, you know, there's some really, really lyrics you don't expect 59-year-old women up with, right? But yet she knew that's where music was going, and so she went right with it. And she was, the day that she died suddenly, March of 1974. And the day that she died, she was coming home from a rehearsal of a show of hers that was about to head out on national tour.
Wow.
So she worked until literally the day she died. In fact, that very day, she had been informed she was nominated for a Tony Award for Seesaw, which she wrote with Cy Coleman.
How did she die? And was she very old at the time?
She was 69, and she died of a cerebral hemorrhage.
Wow.
And just kind of dropped dead kind of thing.
Wow, and so never retired, never did that. What about the kids? Do they follow her in the footsteps in the musical world? Or?
Well, yes. Her son David is a jazz pianist, and he studied music in college and was a jazz pianist. His mother was a little bit, as he was taking up jazz, his mother was a little bit put off by that, but nonetheless supported him, and he's gone on to do great and amazing things and really is a champion of his mother's songbook. He and his late wife had a cabaret show that they would do of a lot of Dorothy Field's songs, and he would play the piano and his wife would sing. Her daughter, Eliza, who passed away in 2008, was a visual artist. So yes, they both took up the arts.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, now I've got a choice now as we come to the end of the interview. I'm in the mood for love, Louis Prima.
Okay.
And Keely Smith, of course. Or Frank Sinatra, The Way You Look Tonight. What I'm going to let you choose.
I'm going to go with I'm in the Mood for Love because that's your favorite. So go for it.
Yeah, I'll go for that. Thank you very much. And it's kind of a little more jolly than The Way You Look Tonight as well.
There you go. Enjoy.
Well, thank you for coming on. The book's available on our website, tre.radio. It's called I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby. And it's Dorothy Fields and her life in the American musical theatre. Fascinating woman. And love chatting to you, Kristen, because your passion is so evident. It's almost like, you know, she's had an effect on your life.
Oh, without question, there is no doubt. I'm better now than I was before I started this. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Are you working on anything else at the moment?
I am. I am. I have some ideas, but nothing set in stone.
Okay.
So
you're not giving anything away, are you?
I'm not going to tip you off, no. But I'll come back and talk about it when I do.
Thank you. Cheers, Kristen. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And I'm in the mood for love simply because you're near me. Funny, but when you're near me,